Welcome to Find, Tell, Share, the Storytellers Podcast, where we meet entrepreneurial artists who share their stories as we discuss everything storytelling. I'm Chris Sissons.
And I'm Gemma Rosenthal. On today's show, we explore cats and dogs, healing and spirituality, and poddling around in rock pools.
And this time, we're delighted to introduce our guest, Audrey Scully. Audrey is a Tao hands healing practitioner, complementary therapist, Tao science messenger, and studying to be a soul healing teacher. She also conducts funeral services, giving loved ones a loving, compassionate, celebratory service. Audrey's mission is to help people to be healthier and happier, to live a more fulfilled life in all aspects, health, relationships, career, business, and finance. Welcome to Find, Tell, Share, Audrey.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me here. Really looking forward to sharing and learning from you as well.
Great. This is the first time on our podcast that we've had someone who does funeral services. So I'd like to ask you, Audrey, what have you found out about grief?
On a personal level, we all have to grieve in one way or another. A lot of us don't. A lot of us suppress the grief. A lot of us think it's not good or strong to be, you know, to show our grief. However, it's very, very important that we do go through the grieving process. And what I find with the funeral services I do, so what I do is I meet the people first, and I find this is very cathartic for them because they get the chance, and I get as many people together as possible, and they get the chance to talk about their loved ones who have just gone, to remember things that they, you know, they wouldn't have thought about. It's it does seem a bit surreal, but it's just, to me, it's just so lovely to hear them telling the stories, or somebody saying something and it's someone else remembering something else. And I like to make it lighthearted as well, you know, so bring a bit of humour in it as well, because that's very, very healing as well. And so the grieving process is helped by, you know, by them talking and sometimes it's quite painful, the things that come up, but it's coming up. At least they're not holding on to it, they're not blocking it, they're not thinking like, well, I can't tell anybody this. And quite a lot of people do say they felt that very helpful. And then at the service itself, like I say, I make it very, you know, try and make it as compassionate as possible, but with humour in it as well. And it's just a story of the person's life from other people. I do services, offer a service where if you're still alive and you want your eulogy done, I can do that for you. I can do that with you. So quite a lot of people do. I've done that already. So they want to, you know, they want to get what they want to say out there after they've gone. And again, that is quite emotional as well, you know, because suddenly you're thinking like, oh, I won't be here to say this. This is like a final thing. But again, that's really, you know, cathartic, therapeutic for the person as well.
I was going to ask, is storytelling a strong part of, do you think storytelling helps people to grieve?
Absolutely. Yes. Because I think, you know, with some funerals, I've been to quite a lot of funerals, and I always think it's lovely when you're hearing about the person, when, you know, this story is being told. So a lot of funerals, it's quite objective, if I can explain it that way, because the person doesn't know. And even though I don't know the person, what I can, you know, collect from other people, I can convey that then. So it's really, really important that I can form it into a story Yeah, with a happy ending at the end. All right, not an happy ending because, but, you know, really uplifting. And I like to end it in something that's light and so people can have a smile on their face or a, you know, and a lovely memory of the service.
Yes, I remember at my grandmother's funeral where there was a lively debate afterwards because the person who was conducting the funeral told the story about she and her husband were very poor during the interwar years, and she made gloves. And the debate afterwards was, did she make gloves or did she make shirts? It was never resolved.
Yeah, but to me, I started, if you can believe this, I started enjoying funerals because we've got large family and relatives, and I used to start looking forward to them because I think, oh, I can see these people again, I can see my relatives, I'll see my uncle, I'll see, you know. But the one that, one of the first ones that really stood out for me was, it was my cousin's 16-year-old daughter. And she actually asked her mum and dad to help her write her funeral. She wrote her own funeral out. And it was the first funeral where they played pop songs and not traditional hymns. And it was just so, I'm getting vibe bumps as I'm saying this. It was just so beautiful because she was, you know, and just listening to her story as well, because she had cancer from being 10 years old, but she was always happy and joyful and she was always helping other people, you know. And I dreamt about her before she was, no, when she was born. I didn't even know her mother was expecting. And her mother, in the dream, the mother said, oh, I'm expecting. And at the time I was working at Bassett's and one of the relatives were there, one of the cousins were there. And I said, oh, I dreamt of Linda last night. She said she was expecting. And my cousin said, oh, yeah, the baby was born yesterday. And I'm like, what baby? You know. So at the funeral, they were saying like she couldn't wait to come here. And I'm thinking, yeah, she came and told me she was here. But yeah, and it was just so beautiful, so lovely, and for like a 16-year-old to write her own funeral and have all the pop songs in it, and we were there like this dancing away, and it was beautiful. Yeah,
yes, it's I'm trying to remember the book. I think the author was Richard Rohr, Rohr, but I'll check if I can find it. I'll put it in the show notes. But he, if I remember correctly, he argues that there comes a point in your life as you get older, you know, into your 60s and 70s, that your perspective on life and death changes and shifts in preparation for your own death. And but it also happens for children who know that they're going to die. And that they go through a similar process. And you were saying that she was laughing and so on. And it sounds like that sort of change was happening for her.
Mm. Yes, yes. To me, she sounded like she was very aware. She knew the importance of life was to be happy, to be joyful. That's how she lived her life. And that's how she wanted, you know, to be remembered as well. And like, you know, at that age, I think it's remarkable. She was remarkable, even though I didn't, you know, see much of her or hear much about her. What I did hear after was, yeah, just amazing. And I think if a 16-year-old can do that, we can all do that. Yeah. You know, when you think like, I don't know if you've thought about what your funeral, how you'd like your funeral, Chris or Gemma, you know. But I've told everybody, no crying, you've got to laugh. And I actually said to my son, everybody's going to come dressed as Lady Marmalade, which he just looked at me gone out and like, that's never going to happen, mother.
Well, some of us might be at a disadvantage if we don't know who Lady Marmalade is.
Is that like the song, Lady Marmalade? I'm so confused, like...
The Basque, even the men have got to wear a Basque, yeah.
promise I won't cry, because sometimes even if I'm laughing, I get tears. And I think of it as happy tears. Well, not happy, but, you know, grateful tears.
Yeah, absolutely.
Grateful tears, absolutely. If that's okay, just because I just know it will happen.
Well, I'm sure we'll all come and have a good belly laugh when you pass, Audra.
Thank you.
You'll be pleased to know I've started to write a list of hymns that I want and readings, which will be duly lodged with my minister, and I've told her not to panic.
what's one of the hymns?
I'll have to have a look.
I've forgotten.
I filed it away. I can't remember now.
Must be really meaningful.
Yes. Well, the reading that I want is Psalm 139, and particularly verse 11. It's quite a long psalm, so I might let them off reading all of it. But it must include verse 11.
Are you paying for a double funeral then, if it's going to be that long?
Sorry. Oh, you double funeral. Yeah, that's right.
Did you say 139?
They can bury me one half of me, and then do the other half of the funeral, and bury the other half.
Just say Chris wanted a lot of readings and hymns, and it's going to take.
Chris, I think you should record it.
Yes.
Record what?
Record yourself saying it.
That might be an idea. Yes.
Yeah absolutely. Because you're an amazing sort of storyteller.
That'll freak everybody out. And one more thing.
And then we can be there, Gemma, and say we were the ones who said that you had to record it.
And
we'll just play this podcast.
My funeral will be everybody's got to be grumpy.
Yeah. I'll come as one of the Grumpy the dwarf. We can all get dressed as grumpy dwarves.
So we've got the opposite funerals. We've got one that everyone has to laugh, and the other one everyone has to be grumpy.
Yeah, Victor Meldrum. Yeah.
And mine, everyone has to sing.
Anyways, swiftly, moving swiftly on, one of the questions for you, Audrey.
I like tears.
One more question for you, Audrey. I was one of the things that fascinated me was Tao. Notice I've pronounced Tao properly, even though it begins with a T. So it's the non-Yorkshire pronunciation. Tao Science Messenger. Now, we're going to be touching on science later, and particularly the link between science and song. But I'm just wondering, what on earth is a Tao Science Messenger?
Okay, so Tao Science has been created by Dr. Master Shigong Sha and Dr. Rulin Shu. So Dr. Rulin Shu is a quantum scientist and a string theorist. And I know you know what that means, don't you, Chris? And so basically, quantum science has discovered that there is this container of information that we hold within us, and within our bodies we have negative information and positive information. This is really basic explanation. And when we have the negative information, that is the doubt, the fear, the jealousy, that is the information that creates all the illnesses and things that we have in our body. The positive information is the joy, the love, the laughter. So when you are, you've heard everybody saying like, be positive, manifest positivity and all that. That is because when you do that, the positive information is coming into your body and it's transforming the negative information. When you read out earlier that I help people to be healthier and happier and help the relationships, finance, business, etc. This is it. This is changing it from a negative aspect to a positive aspect. And it all starts within. So the more you change and you're aware of what you're saying, what you're doing, lots of people, I talk to them and straight away I say something and straight away they say, Yeah, but it's not that easy. Yes, but it's difficult. Yes, but it's hard. And straight away they're putting that negativity in there, that blockage, you know. So just simply changing the word, taking the words difficult, hard, impossible out of your dictionary. I just say, throw it away. Don't use that. That will immediately change the positivity in you, bring in more positive. When you get healing, when, you know, people are praying for you, like I say, when you're watching, I've read so many times people who have been cured of cancer, but they've just watched all these comedies and they've just laughed and laughed and laughed. And, you know, modern science can't explain what's happened, but this is what's happening. It's because they're bringing in this healing, this joyful, happy healing, the love, the universal light that's around, and it's transforming the negativity. And I love that, because to me, people can understand that when I say, well, it's positive and negative, rather than going into all the science of like what the molecule does, what the cell does, what the, you know. So they've created Tao science. So Tao science is basically science explaining spirituality. So in spirituality side of it, the container is your soul or your spirit. And then that information comes into your heart. So your heart receives the information. It sends it to the mind, the consciousness, which processes it. Then it sends it through the energy to the matter, or the jing, as they call it. So that is what you experience, what you touch, what you feel, you know, your relationships, your business, everything. So when everything's positive, then everything flows and everything is beautiful. And when it's negative, then this is when you get all the blockages. You know, you've not got enough money, your relationships, you don't hold relationships, or they're not good, business, etc. So, and then the messenger side of it is, I am a messenger because I'm taking this information out there to help others. So within this, I can help people, you know, with their self-esteem, with their self-love, with their business side of it, with the help to, you know, the healing side. So basically, it's another way, form of helping people to self-heal, you know. So it's not like, ooh, I'm not a healer, I can't do this. It's like, you heal when you smile, you heal when you laugh, you heal when you feel happy, you know. And it's, and so when you're happy, what happens? You're then happy and helpful to someone else, who then helps somebody else, who, you know. So it's this ripple effect. And that's what a messenger does. It, you know, we will go out there and we will share this. And I just love that we finally got a science that can explain spirituality. You know, and Dr. Master Shah, he's a doctor in Western medicine, in traditional Chinese medicine. He's a grandmaster in Tai Chi, Qigong, Feng Shui, lots of things. And he's a grand Tao calligraphy master as well. He has a lot of ancient wisdom as well that he teaches us. So there's a Lao Tzu wrote a book called The Tao Te Ching, which is the way of life, basically. This is how you live your life. That's 2,500 years ago, and which still applies now. And we're still not much further on from where we were, you know, digesting this and absorbing this and being it, being the love, the light, the compassion, the kindness.
Okay, that's great, because I believe it or not, I think we're going to return to this when we get to the rock pools. So, before that, I believe you've got a story to read from Words of Wisdom.
Words of the Wise.
Wisdom
from Awakening Journeys, and you can get it on Amazon or ask one of us as well for a signed
copy. Or look
copy.
In the show notes, which Gemma will give you all the details.
Yeah. Thank you.
Audrey, have you got your book open and ready to go?
I have, yes. So we were asked to write little parts about our lives and a bit of the wisdom. And so I started off with the fear. So Winston Churchill had a quote, "Fear is a reaction, courage is a decision." And then I thought about it and I thought, well, what is fear? I mean, to me, my fear would be different to your fear. You know, some people have fear of talking, of getting standing up and talking. Some people have fear of fire. Some people have fear of going for a job. There's all different types of fear. But I think, but I think that a lot of people, you know, there's a book, isn't there? Face the fear and do it anyway. And fear is basically the unknown. And once we do face the fear and do it, how many people, and how many of you have done this and then thought, what was I worried about? Why couldn't I have done that earlier, you know, because it was actually not that bad. So I think when we face the fear, obviously it sets off a chemical reaction. And through the therapies that I've done, especially learning about the traditional Chinese medicine, we store our fear in our kidneys. Kidneys is the organ that governs fear. So people will then, you know, if you manifest things to do with your kidneys. So the kidneys also control the your hair and your ear, your hearing. You know, as well its own functions. So if something's going on in that area, it's showing you actually you've got some fear coming up here. So, you know, in modern science, you go and you say, oh, I feel anxious, and what they do, they just look at that part. They don't realize that actually this is coming from somewhere. So anxiety is to do with the heart. So, you know, if you came to me, I'd be saying, right, okay, let's focus on your heart, let's look at this, let's look at that area. So the fear is the kidneys. So if you've got something going off, like I say, with your hair, with your hearing, you might look into, like, well, is there something that I'm afraid of? Is there something I'm fearful of? And then if you go, you know, deeper within that, it might be something related with, to do with when you were younger. You know, one incident could spark off this, because if something happens to you that's not very good, you store it in your body. It stores somewhere in your body. And then if the emotion isn't released and let go of, then it manifests. And it can manifest as, you know, as fear. It can manifest as kidney stones. It can manifest as even bladder, because bladder and kidney are pairs. So each organ has a paired organ, a yin and a yang organ. So it's showing you a lot of what's going on within you, and ultimately, you know, what emotion is coming up that needs to be addressed. So we're a bit more complicated than, like, yeah, I've got kidney stones, can you take them out? Why have you got kidney stones? What are the kidney stones there for? You know, let's look a little bit more into this and see what's, and a lot of the times when you do address things like that, you can even release and let go of the, you know, the kidney stones without needing any surgery. And I think this is the way a lot of people are moving forward now, because even to get a doctor's, you know, get hold of the doctor on the phone is quite hard. And people are looking at other ways of how they can help themselves, how they can heal. So that is just one of the areas we looked at. And again, we're talking about laughter being the healing tool. So within us, you know, I've always, in the Bible, you know, or I've heard that, you know, we can heal ourselves. And I was thinking, like, okay, so if we can heal ourselves, how do we do it? How can we do it? And I am learning that now even more. You know, I've been a therapist for over 20 years. And through all the therapies I've done, it's showing me more and more when people come, like, for a massage, back trouble, it's something to do with their security, it's something to do with relationships. And when you sort that out, they go, oh, my back pain's gone, you know. So we are amazing human beings. We have got so much potential, so much power within us. It's just finding out you know, how we can help ourselves and how we can move forward and how we can live a healthier and happier life.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I was looking in the mirror yesterday and I noticed that my left eyebrows turned white. I was just wondering what that means.
It is to do with a chemical in your body, actually. Because you have, and please forgive me, I don't know the chemical, but there is a chemical where your hair can...
Melanin, probably.
Don't know. Don't think it's that one. But anyway, it might be.
Melanin
I am blessed not to have... I mean, this is my colour, my natural colour. But my sisters are going grey. My brother's gone grey. So I'm quite happy having what I've got.
But people think that you're distinguished and wise if you go grey, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
But, fear, I think, is it's very... I mean, you know, I hear fear all the time, particularly in the talk of politicians. And if they're not afraid themselves, they're trying to generate fear in other people. It's very difficult. And I'm sure that does account for a lot of the difficulties people encounter in their daily lives.
The great thing was, you know, COVID was the epitome of fear, because all they did was put fear in people. That was their intention, and I'm saying this. That's what they wanted to do, and that's what they succeeded in doing, you know. And you know, there was all this, you know, people saying like, oh, no, don't. You've got to follow everything they say. And then those people saying, no, you don't. And then the politicians, I mean, I saw that was the jungle where he was asked, and I'm sorry, but I don't follow politics. So the person in the jungle, and, you know, this woman was saying, like, my mother was ill and she was in hospital. I couldn't go and visit her, blah, blah, blah. And why did you break the rules? And he went, oh, they weren't rules. They were just guidelines. And that's how he brushed it off. They were just guidelines, you know. And I'm thinking, these people have followed. She says, we followed everything you told us to do to the letter. And you're just saying it's guidelines, you know. And this is, and it's always, the news is always out there to generate fear in people. So I love it when people say, I don't listen to the news, or I don't read the papers, or I don't, you know, because it's just generating fear in people.
I had quite a lot of fear coming up yesterday, actually. And I know whenever I chat to Audrey, it's always like, for some reason, it becomes a healing session live, but which I probably shouldn't do every time. But if you haven't seen it already, we did a conversation. Audrey was on my Creative Hearts Conversations, so we can drop a link to that as well. The workshop has finished, but you can get the replay if you want to purchase that. But anyways, we did almost like a healing session. But it's interesting you're talking about fear, because that's what I was journaling about, and part of it was because I'd watched Meghan and Harry's, or Harry and Meghan, they call it, the Netflix show they've got going on. And then for some stupid reason, I searched what, you know, like the commentary on it, as in to see what people are saying about it. And it was just, you know, it was all attacking. It's all like this attacking energy of, you know, because they're saying that, well, they were afraid of the press, and then the press are then attacking back. And it's this weird thing going on. And for some reason, it makes me so afraid, because when you're, I know I'm not in the royal family, so it's never going to be like that, but it's just, even when it was happening to Diana and all the stuff, and then she died and things, and I think it just creates this fear around being yourself, being truthful, just being yourself, whether people agree with it or not. And I don't know, it's like just the way they were responding to it around, you know, they were just saying like, Britain's not racist, and da 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 da, and it was just so defensive, you know, rather than actually that calm, more, I don't know, collected response of like, oh, maybe we do need to look at this. Maybe there's something going on. Maybe these people are upset. Maybe we have upset them. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I just think that, I don't know, there just needs to be a more, like...
compassionate.
Where it's like, and they were mocking them for being, saying that they were compassionate and then criticizing them and then saying that they weren't as compassionate as they were saying they were compassionate. But that in itself is not compassionate. Yeah. So if you're going to criticize someone for not being compassionate enough, you have to do it in a compassionate way. Otherwise, you just, I guess it's just projection, isn't it?
Yes, but basically it all comes down to the individual and how they perceive things. And and I think it's very important, especially if you're being fearful, to look at things in a different way, taking a step back and looking at the bigger picture. And, you know, and is this my stuff? Because we take on a lot of other people's stuff and we don't need to. It's like, actually, and if it is affecting you, then it's something within you that, you know, for you to address and look at and think, okay, where's this coming from? Where can I, how can I let go of it? How can I remove it? Because it's coming up to be removed and to be released. If you look at it that way and think, okay, so, you know, I'm not going to get into the fear of all this, but this is a fear that's coming up. How, thank you for showing up, and please let's work at removing you. And then you'll find then that it doesn't affect you as much next time.
Yeah, I think it's the fear, you know, because obviously, like, we're doing a podcast, you know, I'm putting myself out there a bit more with music and things like that. And I want to be able to speak freely and speak what I feel about things without that fear of being absolutely hounded by, like, you know, as in, like, do you understand? I don't know if that's the right way, but you know what I mean? As in, like, because what they do is they'll pick tiny little moments and then criticize that little moment and make it into something. Yeah.
But the thing that it's not. It's like, as you're participating in this, as you're reading it, you're adding to it. So you're adding to that energy. You know, the best thing to do is not to go there, not to read it, not to participate in it. Because all it's doing to you is it's stirring it up, which is something you don't want it to do, you know. You want to let it go. If it does stir up, yeah, okay, this is not mine. Well, this is mine, but that is aggravating it even more. So let's deal with it, you know. So it's always looking at, okay, what is this causing in me, you know. So you're not judging the other people then. I think what we all do, isn't it? And this is what it's about, like, oh, let's judge the royalty. Oh, let's judge the celebrities. Oh, let's judge the person walking down the road. And that's not a thing that we should be doing. We shouldn't be judgmental. And Chris, what are your feelings about being judgmental?
I'm aware these debates are going on, but I studiously ignore them because I'm usually unmoved by anything to do with the royal family, for a start. I'm a bit more moved by politics, but I tend to, it's a bit like water off a duck's back. But I'm currently reading about the Renaissance, and it was the late medieval period, and loads of brilliant creative people. Like, for example, the one that everybody's heard of is Leonardo da Vinci. But the times were brutal. So it wasn't a spat on Twitter. It was knives out and plunged in. and people were forever being exiled or running away to another town and setting up shop there. And, you know, so in some respects, there's less to fear in terms of physical violence as a result of creativity. Obviously, there could be other reasons for physical violence, but other than the emotional and mental stress that comes through those sorts of attacks in social media. But, you know, as Audrey says, you don't have to read it. But generally, Audrey began with Winston Churchill, who famously had a black dog, which was not a very nice black dog. And I believe you've got a story about a much friendlier dog.
Yeah.
So if you want to segue to that, that would be wonderful.
Okay, so this is my Words of the Wise extract. I think just to kind of say, so I think my fear comes around the fear of speaking, even though I'm quite good at public speaking. But when I first read out part of my book, it brought up a lot of emotion. This was at the launch, and it was quite unexpected. I didn't realise it was going to bring up so much emotion. So I think part of the reason why that specific issue around, you know, people criticising public figures perhaps stirs up so much emotion in me is because I have fear around sharing my emotions, and then I don't want that to be misinterpreted by other people, whether that's even just a smaller amount of people, if that makes any sense. But I am going to take it in another way. So it's like, okay, I'm being braver and I'm just going to share and not worry about it. So it's just a learning curve. I think it's about learning to feel the fear and do it anyway, like Audrey said. I've read that book as well. Just not listening to the noise around it, just knowing what your truth is within that. Okay, so here is a little bit of my chapter from Words of the Wise. Another thing I did was I went to many therapists and courses as I could. One time I was sat on the couch of my therapist's house. Her own art on the walls, she was an artist. I admired this, being a creative myself. This session we were doing inner child healing, integrating my adult self to care for my younger self. Popping out from behind the door, the dog comes in. Sitting beside me and snuggling up, "Do you want the dog out?" my therapist asked. "No, no," I said, "it's okay." Smiling, I started to feel an overwhelming relief come through as I released tears and let go. "Wow," I said. My hands felt calmer in the fur. The dog really helped me release my emotions. "They tend to pick up on what we need comforting the most. They sense it," she explained. What I learnt from this experience is how much we need dedicated time to process things, as well as the healing power of connecting with animals and the presence they hold is profound. So I know Audrey has a little bit in her book as well around the cat.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that was lovely. Thank you, Gemma, for sharing that. When things happen to me, they never happen normally. It's always, I call it a do-do-do-do. And I was driving down the motorway listening to Radio 2, and they had two women on, and they were talking about telepathy with animals. And I thought, ooh, that's interesting. And then many months later, I was at a client's house, and I was just going to leave. And she said, oh, I'm going to the RSPCA on Saturday and Sunday for an animal thoughts course. And I said, is that what I think it is? And it was. It was teaching us to communicate with animals. So I went on it thinking I could help my son's dog and my friend's cat. It was a two-day course. So the first day we were given questions to ask. So these people came in with their animals. We had to ask the animal, and then the owners told us, you know, what was right. So I got about 50-50 right. And the next day, they brought out this dog from the RSPCA, and he's laid there having his tummy stroked while we were asking him questions. So the first question was, what home would you like to go to? So I answered all the questions and everything. And then in the afternoon, this cat came out, and before we saw her, we could hear her going, meow, meow, really loud. And I thought, wow, what a noisy cat. Bearing in mind that I like animals. I wouldn't say I love them, but I like animals, you know. So she came in and she had a walk around, and she was so small. And she nestled next to P, who was the instructor, and she's rubbing her head against her trainer. You know, obviously she's got something wrong with her teeth. And so we had to ask the questions, what home would you like to go to? So I closed my eyes and I got yours. I saw yours on my, you know, I'm like, what? So normally when I do this, I'm like, is this really me saying it? Or am I, you know, am I getting this? Or is it me? Or and I thought, that is not mine. I would not have had that answer. So in my head, I said to her, right, if you want to come and live with me, I want you to come here. I want you to walk to me. Now, this is a cat. So I looked at her. I thought, she's not going to do it. And she got up and she walked to me. And she walked between my legs, under my chair, and went round. So in my head, I'm like, oh, thank you for that. Now, just to make sure, could you do? And I got a voice in my head saying, Audrey, you've just told her to do something. Asked her. She's done it. What more proof do you want? And I'm like, oh, okay. Anyway, I also got that she didn't want any more animals. And then someone said she didn't like men. And P had gone to this other lady and said, asked her, you know, and she said, oh, I've looked in her eyes and she's suffered so much. And so P said, do you want to take her home? And I'm thinking, what? Wait a minute. Whoa, she wants to come to my home. So cut long story short, we went at the end, we went to her and P was asking her questions. And, you know, and she said, like, do you have a garden? Will I be the only one you adore? Will I have chicken? Anyway, she couldn't decide. So then we had to go and ask if our house was the right house for her, highest good. So the other lady went in first and she got nothing. And when I went in, I got yes. So I'm like, well, I got a yes, but I don't know if it's right. So she came to live with me and she was so gorgeous. She was a healing cat. I'd give her healing, she'd give me healing. But what she brought me was this unconditional love that I've never felt before. It was so different to any love I'd ever felt before. And the respect and the love I have now for animals is totally changed, you know, really, really to me they are more than just an animal who runs about and eats and that. Each of them have got their own personality, but each of them have got their own spirituality as well. So my whole world changed with in the animal field because of my beautiful queen. She was called Vicky, but her name was Queen. And aww. She did, one of the questions she asked us was, if I only lived 2 years, would you be upset? So this lady said, well, you do get upset. And I'm like, nope, I'll have enjoyed the journey. I won't be upset. And I wasn't upset, but I said, I want to be there when she goes. And the answer I got was, everything is planned, everything is sorted. And I was there when she went, not in the way I thought it would happen. But yeah, and a friend was with me, was a sensitive. And when she passed, because I took her and, you know, had her put down, and I'm stroking her while she had the needle. And when she went, my friend said, did you feel that? I said, what? She says, overwhelming peace when she went. And I said, and can you hear that? And on the radio, they were singing, everything's going to be all right. So, yeah, so I am so, so grateful to have her. And it was 2.5 years she lived before she died, yeah. So thank you.
Thank you for sharing that. And I just think it's a really beautiful journey for you and the cat.
Thank you.
Chris, have you ever had any animals?
Yes. When we were kids, we had the first cat was called Minty and it ran away. So that didn't last very long. And the second one we had I'll tell you what it's called in a moment. We got it as a kitten. It was a ginger tom. And when it was a kitten, it ran up our bodies and sat on our shoulders. And there was a cartoon in the Sheffield Star. I think it was called Augusta or something. But it was about a family with a little girl. And they had a kitten. And it ran up the bodies and sat on top of their heads. And so we decided to name our cat the same name as the cat in the cartoon strip. And the name of the cat in the cartoon strip, which was a big belly laugh because it was a cartoon strip, was Crippen, who, as you know, was a murderer.
Sorry?
Yeah, duh. So we had the it was a good name to call out. It was clear and distinctive, and he would respond, and he stayed with us most of the time. I mean, my sister and I went to university, and he died while we were away, but he adopted another family, and they had him put down, and my mother was really upset because she thought it was her responsibility to have him put down. I mean, he was ill. I remember the last time I saw him, he was wheezing, and he sat on my knee, and you know, I could tell he didn't have long. But that was a bit frustrating at the end, as you might imagine. But I suppose the people who did it meant well. So those are my. And we had tropical fish and gerbils and hamsters, and but they never lasted very long for one reason or another.
And now you have a story about rock pools.
Yeah. And these days I'm not terribly excited by going to the seaside. I mean, when we were kids, that was our holiday. I can remember planning ahead. We'd choose a destination like Yarmouth or Torquay or whatever, and we'd look through all the catalogues and choose a hotel, and then take it. Took ages to travel in those days because there were very few, if any, motorways, so there was often a stop overnight. And when we got there, the pattern was mornings on the beach, afternoons we went out and visited things, and maybe a show in the evening because there were loads of end of the pier shows and that sort of thing. Audrey will remember all of this. And and you got your bucket and spade, and you went on the beach, and you built sandcastles, and had ice cream, of course, and there were lots of bright lights and places that sold sticks of rock and rock factories and so on. When I look back now, what I remember most is rock pools. I mean, I enjoy beach walking, just walking where you've got enough, you know, where it's not just sort of in a cave, you know, in a bay, and you can't get beyond the cliffs, but it's great just walking along. And of course, the beach is a place where lots of plants and animals live. They're not always visible, they're often below the surface. But rock pools are quite different. And I used to really enjoy, and as I got older, much more than building sandcastles and sitting around on the beach. I mean, if you took me to sit on the beach now, I'd be looking around. Where are the rock pools? You know, that would be where I want to go, and have a good hunt around. And the great thing about rock pools is you never know what you're going to find, because it's not like if you walk through a wood. I mean, you can find all sorts of things, but you know there's little eyes watching you, and you'll never see the little eyes because they're all very carefully concealed. But with a rock poo, there's no way out. So if there's anything in there, you're going to find it. And as I was in the sixth form at school, we went to Scarborough and we did for biology. And we studied the rock pool, the black rocks in Scarborough. And when I was at university, still doing biology, we did Millport, which is an island off Scotland somewhere. and I learned the names of a lot of the things. Some of the names I've forgotten now, but the Latin names. So for seaweed, there's Fucus and Laminaria and Enteromorpha and so on. And there are winkles and whelks and mussels, limpets, barnacles. I knew most of the names of all of those. But the thing about names is it's just a label in the end, whether it's the Latin name or the English name. You don't really get to know the song that animal or plant is singing. There are lots of ways you can hear or experience that song. And one of them is through science. And I've been reading this book by Adam Nicholson called Life between the tides. And in this book, he actually sets up some experimental rock pools. So the first couple of chapters are a bit dry because he's just describing how they set up these experiments. but then after that, the book gets really interesting and it focuses on certain species and then looks more at the culture of the seashore, because this is somewhere in Scotland, and the history of the people who live there and their folklore. So you begin to get a feel of not just for the animals, but for the interaction with human beings as well. And one of the great things about searching through rock pools and turning over stones and so on is most of the animals you find there are fairly dull coloured. Same with the plants, mostly browns and greys, maybe a few creamy whites. But occasionally you find something that's a very vivid colour. So I think the most colourful thing I've ever found is a sea cucumber, which is related to the starfish. And that's really garish, bright, luminous colours. But another great thing to find, more common than that, is the sea anemone. And the sea anemone is usually a very bright red colour. It's the same, Cylenterate, which is the order that has jellyfish and things like that in it. In fact, it's an upside down jellyfish. If you imagine a jellyfish as a sort of umbrella, turn it upside down so that the tentacles face upwards, there's your sea anemone. And they're called sea anemones because that's the name the Victorians gave them, because apparently they look like the flower anemone. So I'm not quite sure whether, I mean, presumably some people thought they were plants, because you look at them and you think, well, that's beautiful. And like a lot of plants, it doesn't do anything much. But actually, it's quite active. And in those tentacles, it's got things called nematocysts. And when an innocent little shrimp goes swimming past, the nematocysts shoot out and they've got poison darts and hooks and they pull it in into their inside and digest it. So some scientists took a few anemones on a rock and put the rock in a tank so they could watch it. And then they introduced another anemone. Now, the ones that were originally on the rock had red feet, and this new one was the same species but had a blue foot. So they put it next to one of the red foot and they watched it. And first of all, they sort of intertwined tentacles and got to know one another. And then they realised that they weren't the same. And so a fight ensued. And who would imagine that sea anemones fight? And it was actually that they were amazed at what they saw, because they started fighting and blasting nematocysts at one another, and then Redfoot suddenly shot up to two or three times its usual height and bent over, and they started throwing the nematocysts at one another, and then Redfoot suddenly stretched itself up to two or three times its usual height, bent over, and then launched a barrage of nematocysts at poor Bluefoot. And Bluefoot just sort of scrunched up, and then its foot detached from the rock and it began to float away. And as it floated past Redfoot, Redfoot shot out another barrage of nematocysts, and don't come back, as if to say. And then Bluefoot went and cowered in the furthest corner of the tank. And Redfoot, still at this height, bent over to the spot where Bluefoot had been and deposited a baby sea anemone. Question for you, Audrey. You've got a choice. You can have a sea anemone or a ruby. They're the same colour. Which would you take?
I would probably say a sea anemone, because that's more, there's more action to it that you can see than the ruby. The ruby has its qualities and it has its energies and it's beautiful. However, you probably get more interesting day-to-day interaction with the sea anemone.
So, who would have thought you would interact with a sea anemone? But there's something, I mean, it was a bit of research, you know, there were scientists who were doing this, but I just loved it as a piece of science because it opened up something of the essence of what these animals are. Because, you know, normally when you encounter them in a rock pool, they're just there waving the tentacles about. Yeah. That's it. You know, they don't do anything else. And, you know, just knowing there's this going on, and there's a whole complex culture, actually, because that little baby sea anemone is actually a clone. And when you find a cluster, they're all the same DNA. Same, wow. In fact, they're the same organism, but in different, but there's several of them all, but they're all the same. And so that sort of explains what they're about. But you begin to see, I don't know whether Gemma could turn that literally into a song. Oh, you get the ruby, Gemma.
I get the ruby.
Yeah, you get the ruby.
Is it a stone?
A crystal,
yeah. Well, I have actually been getting into crystals. I'm holding two right now. I'm holding a black onyx and a tiger's eye. Because I've been buying, I don't know why, I've just felt quite drawn to crystals and holding them and finding out their meanings. And I find it healing. You know, because you can just look at a crystal and suddenly feel calmer. And so it's been helping me this morning to just feel a bit calmer. So this one's supposed to be, so the black onyx is supposed to be about protection and stability and integrity. And then I think the tiger's eye is about courage and determination. I might be wrong about them, but I'm not quite sure, but something like that. So I've not got a ruby though, so maybe it's a sign.
Ruby is usually related to 40th anniversaries as well, so something you can look forward to when you get married.
Okay. Well, not immediately.
Yeah. Crystals have their own energy and their own attributes. And yeah, you'll get drawn. I love going to the crystal, you know, the fairs, and then you just look and you pick like, that one's mine. Yes, thank you, was mine.
I'm gonna see what it means. The ruby.
It's interesting though that you can ascribe those characteristics to a crystal, but we don't do that with animals and plants so much, or do we?
Yeah, I think we do.
And maybe that's part of our what's the word I'm looking for? Our separation from the natural world.
Mm. What, that we ascribe properties to things?
Or don't.
Or don't.
Yeah. I mean, do we actually see the natural world around us, and particularly the living things? You know, just because they sit there quietly waving their arms about and doing nothing very much, is that a reason to ignore them?
But this is it, isn't it? No. There's all this other worlds going on, you know, with everything around us, even amoeba and things like that. We don't know about. We only learn about in biology. We don't see it, we don't, you know, but it is, you know, that world is, you know, that amoeba is in the amoeba world and we're in the bigger world and we're all interlinked and intertwined, but half of the time we haven't a clue of what's out there or what we're interacting with.
I've searched ruby and it's It says that they signify passion, protection, and wealth. And also love and commitment.
So you're giving all that up, Audrey, for a sea anemone.
Well, it's probably because Audrey already has those.
I think rubies are easier to get hold of than a sea anemone, and you have to put the sea anemone in its own environment. The right environment as well.
Yeah. You'd need a tank.
She's choosing a living thing. Well, I don't know if crystals count as living things. Maybe they are. But, you know, a moving thing.
Yeah. What I love about crystals is you can be attracted to a crystal and then suddenly it disappears. You don't know where it's gone.
Yeah.
And it's just the crystal way of saying, right, you've got what you need. Now we're off. We're going to help someone else. Mm-hmm. but yes, there's so much out there that we don't know about. And we don't know how we're interacting, although I'm sure we are on like an energetic level or another level. Such a beautiful world we live in.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering, Audrey, your story about the cat, I've forgotten what you called it now.
Queen.
Royalty, quite right. that relationship that you had with Queen, you know, to what extent can that be transferred to other animals or plants? Is it really just the sort of higher mammals where you can have that sort of relationship,
plants, even water. I don't know if you've heard of a Dr. Emoto Usui. Is it Usui? I always get his name wrong. He studied water. And what he did was he put water in different containers and he got people to go to one container and say love, love, love. Another container was peace. Another one was hate. Another one was, I don't know, all these different words. And then what he did, he froze the water and he looked at the crystals in each of these, came from all these containers. And they were so beautiful. The love and gratitude, I think, is one that is so beautiful. And the pattern that it made, love and peace. And then he looked at hatred. He looked at Hitler. And these, because everything, what water does, it absorbs the energies around us and then it forms to, what the energy is. And the Hitler and hatred was all gnarled and brown and all cluttered together, whereas the love and the peace and the gratitude were all out and had these beautiful designs and clear colours and absolutely gorgeous. And they even tried it with music. They did it with music. So the heavy metal was all gnarled and horrible. And, you know, some of the classicals were beautiful. What it's proving is that water absorbs what's going around, the energy around us. So the water that we drink, you know, we can enhance this water before we drink it, by saying love, 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 or I love you, I love you, and the water will change before you drink it. And so we have to be really careful about what we're saying, what we're doing. But yes, and of course the tap water's got all the chemicals in and everything like that. So we can, a lot of people have done these little placemats with the word love on it, or you know, peace, and people place the water on top of it, or you can write love and peace on the glass or something like that, and it will absorb it and change the molecules. So yeah, everything can be changed. Everything is interacted. You got one.
Well, you can't see it obviously on the podcast, but I've got gold encrusted into a placemat. So this I got on, I worked for, I don't know if both of you know Jennifer, Iceland Cleaning company. Basically, I was working at a shop and they sold these placemats. They sold local Sheffield artwork and different things like placemats and things. So I just thought they were so beautiful because of the gold inside of them. So I got a few. So I put my... I've also got one that says B-Rate, which is also by a Sheffield artist. I've forgotten his name, but... So every time I look at that, I think, oh, it'll be right.
He has a shop down at Hillsborough, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Do you know his name?
I don't, not offhand, no. I do like his thing.
Be right. Luke Horton, is it?
I'm wondering what fans of heavy metal would have made of the last conversation. I mean, it's. I can't really defend it because I'm not keen on it. Sorry.
I'll defend it. I think with music, I don't like anyone judging any style of music because, I can see what you mean that might have happened with classic if they played it, but that when you say that even. They won't have played every single classical piece of music and they won't have played every single metal piece of music. So it really depends on the frequency of the artist. And I know this being a musician myself, the mind state of the artist, the intention behind what the creation was, and also how the listener responds to the music. So I don't think it's about whether it's heavy metal or whether it's classical, because there's lots of classical music that's not actually as high vibration as you think it is, and there's lots of metal music that's not actually as low vibration as, like, I've listened to this Christian metal music and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? And there can be positive. One of my favourite bands actually that I'm inspired by is Evanescence, and I know it's not like proper heavy metal, but I don't know what you'd call it, but I mean they're just beautiful. It's just beautiful in my opinion, because it's a mixture of the it's got classical vocals, but then there's the heavy metal band behind it, and then the classical piano as well. So I think the way that they blend it is just beautiful. And I think what the misunderstanding with heavy metal is, it's not about putting negative energy into the universe. It's about expressing the pain. And I think when sometimes we express the pain, yeah, it's not going to look good. It's going to look messy. It's going to look angry. You know what I mean? But it has to be done sometimes. And I think for a lot of heavy metal fans, like, it might be just that's their way of, if they didn't listen to it, maybe they would express it in a much less healthy way, if that makes sense. So I do think it is their lifeline. It's some of them, it's probably saved their lives, you know, stopped them committed suicide or something like that. So I think we have to just be aware that there's always, I think the way Audrey was just describing it is obviously that the water can be changed by what we think and what we say and how we intend, the intention behind it. So obviously there will be certain kinds of music which will not bring about a pretty water.
Or perhaps the explanation would be that it's the response of the person or people in the vicinity of the water to the music, as opposed to the music itself.
That's interesting, Chris, because you can't separate it, can you? You can't separate the scientist from the observer from the observed, and that's part of quantum science, is that you can't separate the two. So whatever the scientist is thinking is going to affect how the experiment goes.
So actually, I don't know what the how they experimented, whether they just listened to the music and they did it, just play the music to the water or what. I mean, there will be explanations somewhere. And I don't know what kind of heavy metal. Oh my goodness! I'm just going to show you this. Okay, I don't know if hopefully you can see it. So here we've got wisdom here, and then this one is, I'm reading it back to front here.
They won't be able to see it because we're on a podcast.
Yeah, I'm just showing Gemma and that so they can see it. But down here, which I was, can you see where it says angel? And then,
yes, yeah, angel. And
then,
I love.
Yeah,
you.
And then look at that one. This is you make me sick. This one.
Oh, horrible. Yeah, that's not nice of it.
So,
well, that looks like how you feel when you feel sick, doesn't it?
But this is, so this is just showing you, giving an example of the different, the way the crystals are formed by the words that they've, you know, that are there. I love you, angel, wisdom. I can't see what the top one is. It's thank you. The top one is thank you.
So the same thing is with words. So it is a nuanced thing. So that certain words have certain vibrations because of how many times people have said those words with that frequency. So for example, the words you make me sick, they're not actually of themselves, the words have no meaning, like, but it's because of how many times we've associated those words with, you know, sickness. And the same with I love you, you know, the words in themselves, for some people, if they hear I love you, they don't feel love, they probably feel fear, you know, because it's what brings it up for them. But the meaning of the words is still, you know,
it's how it's being said as well. Because like you, you can say I love you, or you can say I love you,
and you can really mean it.
Yeah.
So I think that would affect the water as well, depending on how you say it. And whether you mean it.
But the ones that's written down, it will come from the person who wrote it, yeah. So it won't be, there wouldn't be a frequency, a voice frequency there, it would be the emotion, yeah.
Oh, okay, so they didn't say it, they just wrote it down. Yeah. So Audrey, if people want to find out more about your work, how do they go about it? And I will have the notes in the show.
Yeah,
thank you.
So I have a Facebook page called, or my business is called Purity Natural Healing. And I'm on Instagram. I think it's Audrey Scully. I don't know. Sorry. I have a Twitter account. And I'm on LinkedIn as well. Purity Natural Healing. But my website is called audrey@audreyscully.com. No, sorry. My website is audreyscully.com.
Yep. And my business is Creative Hearts. So you can follow me on creativehearts.coach. I also have a YouTube channel, which Audrey is featured on, as I mentioned before. And you can also purchase the replay of our workshop, which was called Deepen Your Soul's Journey, and a very profound workshop, if I must say so. I think it was very meaningful for everybody that's watched it and participated in it. And you can also ask us any questions about anything that you've heard today or anything that you hear on any of the other videos. And also, you can work with me on finding your voice and creativity, anything to do with creativity or spirituality. And yes, also follow my music pages, Gemma Rosenthal, on pretty much all the sites, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, all the things. I don't go on Twitter as much or LinkedIn, but I occasionally post on there. So more likely to find me on Instagram or Facebook at the moment, currently. And Chris, how do you get in touch with you? Oh, sorry, listen to music on Spotify and iTunes as well. And YouTube. Go, Chris.
Okay, my business is Market Together. And I help you get your story straight, particularly if you want to market your business or develop your business, because your stories are really important in helping you to understand your business at a deeper level. And it may sound odd to say that most people don't really fully understand their own business, particularly if they're working on it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, forever and ever. Maybe that's the problem. And it's great fun just looking at the stories that surround your business as a cloud of stories and working out what they're saying to you about your business. I do taster sessions usually on second and fourth Thursdays, which are either live if you live in Sheffield area or on Zoom if you don't live in the Sheffield area. If they're live, it's 12 noon for 12:15. At the moment, we're meeting at the Island Cafe in Callum Island, or if it's on Zoom, it's at 2 o'clock. So that's a good way of getting started and seeing me and meeting other business people who will help you take one of your stories and work on it and relate it to your business.
They are. I've had sessions with Chris, and they are very good. And I've had sessions with Audrey as well, and both of them have experienced a bit of my sessions as well. So I feel like we could almost promote each other probably better than we promote ourselves.
Yes, I've totally enjoyed Chris's sessions. They've really helped every time I've interacted with them. And Gemma's got a beautiful voice.
Oh, thank you so much. And Chris has had one-on-one sessions with me as well around finding your voice. How did you find them, Chris?
Yep. I've got a beautiful voice as well.
Yeah.
And everybody has. It's just that sometimes it gets a bit scrunched up by life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So you need Gemma to unscrunch it, if that's a word.
Allowing your natural.
And it really is about self-expression. And we've been talking about that, animals and plants and stones and water, and it's our stories are really about recognizing that expression of other things. The world only seems to be plotting against us because we don't listen to it and pay attention to it. Just to keep it really simple. I think we need to bring this.
Can I just say the solution is to follow nature's way. Fortsaran, follow nature's way. When you follow nature's way, everything flows freely, smoothly. When you don't, it doesn't.
That's like my new single, Trust the Flow, as well, which features a waterfall.
Yes, beautiful.
So it's all about following nature, really, and nature told me to do that outside. I was going to film it inside, and then I got told that it needed to be water themed, and we had to find a waterfall.
It's a beautiful video. I recommend you listen to it.
Thank you,
Gemma.
So thank you for listening, and make sure you check out our other podcasts. We've got lots and lots of episodes for you to check out, and wonderful healers, artists, entrepreneurs, and telling their stories. So thank you for listening.
Thank you, and goodbye.
Thank you, goodbye.